Hi, Dominique, and welcome to another edition of The Week Ahead. How are you doing?
Very well, Andrew. How are you?
Good, good. So quick timestamp because there was some data that came out today. So it's London at about 3 p.m. afternoon on Friday. So just kind of use that as a timestamp. So as we always like to do, let's kind of dive in and see your big takeaways about any data, market reaction, Fed speeches, obviously some political fun stuff. What stood out from you?
So let's start with the elephant in the room of the trial. So the reason we're talking about politics is because there is a big difference in the macro regime that we are likely to get after a Trump or after a Biden victory. I hope listeners will get a copy of the note Mirza Virash and I published. So how does
This is
the
on like how a Trump 2.0 administration could potentially affect markets and how
exactly
investors should be thinking about it. Okay, perfect.
exactly so does Trump being found guilty change that? My guess is no. I mean, there were titles in the newspapers, past surveys of voters. Bloomberg had an article saying that the verdict doesn't change the support Trump is likely to get from the financial sector. The polls, at least on the public radio, it showed as many people likely to be turned off as turned on by the meeting across party lines. Republicans saying that they were more likely to vote for Trump if he was found guilty. So my hunch is that we won't see much of a change in the polls. And the reason I think that is when the trial started, which was mid of last month, you didn't see much movement in the poll. You did see a big change in betting odds. But then the betting odds moved, that moved in Biden's favor became completely decoupled from the polls. And so they converged after a while to the polls. So my guess is no, but we're going to find out over the next couple of weeks. Other than that, it was interesting. What was interesting this week, I thought, was the Fed definitely turning more bearish and more pessimistic on whether they have tightened enough. That was conveyed in the minutes. Many participants were wondering, and it's important to qualify many because the minutes have a code. Participants, meaning just about everybody agrees. Many participants, close to the majority or the majority, a few, and so on and so forth. So these are nuances that are important. And basically, what the minutes did is they introduced the risk that the Fed could hike again, though it's still a small risk because they use well, many participants, wondered if policy was tight enough rather than all participant or participants. And then you had a follow-through with the Fed speakers this week, wondering about whether R-Star has gone up, Logan in particular, Williams, who is in a way R-Star's father and mother, I guess, saying that policy would be based on the economy, not on R-Star, which is, what Powell has been telling us, that R-Star is an academic concept. And when you do real-time policy making, you can't really rely on academic views. So I thought it was important. It's new. And in my view, it just reflects the resiliency of growth, despite the fact that the Fed, Fed tightening, they've increased the Fed funds rate 525 basis points, which is about the average since the 1960s. Also, if you look at the change in the Fed funds rate relative to the Taylor rule, this is the largest change since the 1960s. So they've really gone hard, but we're still seeing very strong growth. So that I think was really important. And I think in terms of the FOMC, it suggests we're going to see fewer cuts, 2024 cuts in the SEPs and the three we had in March. I think one cut is probably the more likely outcome. So that was the Fed. In terms of data, the most important was PCE and personal income and saving, personal income and spending. And there it was roughly as expected. Spending was a bit lower than expected, but it's just a single data point. So that's this week. For this coming week, well, NFP Friday, the consensus forecast is 185,000 for the headline number. Yeah, that's reasonable, though, for the Fed and for inflation, wages and inflation. What matters is labor market balance, so it's the unemployment rate. Consensus forecast for unemployment is still below 4%, 3.9%. So overall, the consensus still has a view that the labor market is tight, and I agree with it. You know, if you look at unemployment claims, if you look at the Conference Board confidence survey, the jobs plentiful minus hard to find, all of this data shows the labor market still fairly strong. We will get the jolts, and I think, you know, again, I'm not expecting a big change there. What I'm expecting is a continued decline in labor market flows. So yes, the hiring rate is slowing, but the separation rate is slowing as well. Basically, people are getting too old. There are not enough skilled workers around. So employers are hanging on to their workers, and that makes for smaller labor market flows. We're probably going to get, you know, a small change in the number of opening relative to the number of unemployed, and in the number of actual hires relative to the openings that are advertised, and a small change in the direction of labor market rebalancing, but not much.
Yeah, it looks like it's just like a slow downward gradual trend.
A hundred
Yeah,
percent.
and still well above pre-COVID.
Well, I mean,
Yeah.
yeah.
Yep.
The other thing I'll be looking at is the trade balance, because I think the US economy is very slowly but surely on its way to overheating, and that typically shows with a worsening of external indicators like the trade balance or the current accounts. And then we'll have the PMIs. So I love the PMIs. The only thing is they don't correlate well with GDP anymore. Still, it's important for traders. So we have a whole section of our website dedicated on how to trade those PMIs, and I hope our listeners will get to that section. So, and of course, it's a pre-meeting blackout for the Fed. So that's about it.
Okay, so and then I guess I kind of understand that the answer, but do you see any things particularly in the US economy that investor that you're worried about, or you still see the real risk is the overheating? You don't see any cracks in.
So the things, the risk I'm concerned about are mitigated by Fed policy. What I mean is that I see really too big risk. And let me backtrack. When you have decades of super low interest rate, it's unavoidable that there are imbalances, financial imbalances that build up. So we saw, for instance, with the banks, the interest rate risks that they had built, still there, by the way. But the thing is, so let's talk about precisely two, in my view, two risks. One is a commercial real estate. There are going to be losses because the value has gone down, because people are working from home, the vacancy rates have gone up. I'm talking about offices, especially for multifamily housing. I think there is much less of a risk, but there are some wealth losses that people are going that are going to have to be absorbed somewhere. I'm not too worried about them because it's not going to impact the household sector very much, and the U.S. economy is consumption driven. So as long as household balance sheet don't get hit much, I think someone else will absorb the
Right
loss. And
now, it would be the banks, I guess, and the banks are
bank
relatively good
shareholders,
enough position to handle it anyway.
bank shareholders will take a
Yeah,
hit,
bank share,
but
right.
not the majority. And in my view, the other risk is that the overall banking sector, there are a lot of small banks in the US that are probably not viable. They just have too much of a disadvantage in terms of funding cost relative to the big banks. They don't have the same efficiencies. And so I think we're going to continue to have, the episodic bank failure, but the risks are hidden because the Fed has this operating framework that basically floods the market with reserves, destroys the money market. So we're not seeing those risks. Also, the Fed has made it clear that there is, or implicitly, there is no depositor in the US that's going to suffer a loss, insured or not. So any failure will be addressed through a resolution. That's not going to create a panic or impose losses on the economy. I mean, someone will have to pay, obviously. So far, it's been the larger banks who've seen their FDIC assessment. So the cost of deposit insurance go up to fund
Okay.
the FDIC losses. But in my view, this let no depositor take losses and let's support the banks no matter what. This is impeding the transmission of Fed tightening. And we see that with an increase in credit card delinquency close to levels we had around the GFC, which is crazy because the economy is super strong now.
Correct.
So what I think is going on is that some banks, there is moral hazard in the banking system that some banks are giving out credit cards to people who shouldn't get them. And they are giving out credit cards probably because the value of their franchise is low. They are not that profitable. So heck, why not, take a punt on credit cards? And then there is the backup from the Fed. So people are still consuming by borrowing and then not paying back their loans, their credit card loans, which is helping the US economy to keep humming. Is this a big factor? No. But I think this very high delinquency rate tells you that there's something that is not working in the banking system.
Interesting. Okay. Awesome. Okay, cool. Thank you. That was great. Quick one, I guess, on just highlighting a few pieces from the last week. Just came out now is Mears and Liang's China growth tracker. Again, so some mixed signals. Still definitely questions about the internal, I guess, demand, and certainly the consumer in China is continuing to be pretty weak. And I guess even some of the manufacturing numbers have been a bit exporting numbers have been a bit weaker, which is another China watch, actually also came out today. But I'll put some thoughts post the Trump conviction. I guess it's probably the first one we've done, or is a kind of longer form thematic kind of country deep dive. So Mirza did a deep dive into Korea and the Korean economy. So if people haven't seen that, I would highly recommend reaching checking that out, and reach out to me or any then researcher salespeople if you have problems finding that. The obviously an amazing thing this week was Dominic, you and Varesh and Mirza doing that webinar, like you were saying about Trump 2.0, the macro market implications. And that's also on the back of a much on a very kind of deep dive into research around that. And I guess that's a good amount of that's a th those are definitely some good highlights. A lot of stuff, obviously talking about Fed becoming a bit more hawkish. Then a lot of stuff around kind of our favorite trade ideas. That's kind of it from my side. So would love to wish everyone, a fantastic weekend, and obviously good luck in the markets. And if you have been away in the U.S. or U.K. this past week, please feel free to reach out. Obviously, we're very happy to summarize any of our thoughts or views. Hopefully, you got some good stuff from this video as well. That's it from my side. And any parting words?
Good luck, everybody. And I hope that, our listeners read those pieces we've published this week.
Awesome. Thanks.